Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus. Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Curry, I'm your presenter for this session of Senior Focus. And we're celebrating the New Year's Honours List. It's very good to see people who have served their communities and who particularly are strongly from the voluntary sector. So 33% of the list is from the voluntary sector and 52% of recipients are women. Lately, in recent years, there have been a number of champions of the senior voice, those who support and advocate for an age-friendly city, for planning for the future that strongly represents understanding about what the needs of seniors are, given that we've got a rapidly growing, ageing senior population. So Dr. Judy Blakey was a guest on a number of our sessions over the past few years, and a couple of years ago she was a member of New Zealand Order of Merit, and last year we had the President of Auckland Grey Powers Federation, Jan Pentecost, was a QSM. And this year we have Heather Tange, a former Mayor of Palmerston North and currently involved with her local Glen Eden community, gaining a QSO. So this is auguring quite well in the sense it's creating a pattern, and we hope to see that pattern continue. The RSA are a bit concerned that the Defence Forces are not strongly represented in the list currently. But I guess if there is a change towards health, education and the arts as being important in building resilience in community at this time because of COVID, in terms of emergency management, it's kind of the community building stuff that really counts, I guess, in terms of keeping society focused and together and peaceful, especially in the wake of the many disasters and the Christchurch mosque attack and so on. I see that possibly there is a change in the way the list is being composed, but we will understand more about that as people inquire more and more research goes on into what trends are happening there. I note that Carol Beaumont becomes an officer of New Zealand Order of Merit for her services in human rights and to unions. Daniel Bergen also for her services to the community in support of the homeless, one of my former students. So it's quite it's quite sort of rewarding sometimes to read what connections we have with people and who gets selected. Sometimes there might be some question marks because people are not particularly known outside of their particular field or their particular community. But it was very heartwarming to see Dame Ruia Morrison receive her award, given that she'd already been recognised by Wimbledon and by the Māori Sports Hall of Fame. It seemed timely that New Zealand got in on the act. Now, today's session, I'm going to be focusing on the elder abuse topic from a slightly different angle from how a lot of people would handle it in the media, because it's World Elder Abuse Awareness Day coming up on the 15th of June, and it's every year I do some program around this, but there's a lot of conversation about scamming, there's a lot of conversation about family members abusing their elders for financial gain, and some cases people are getting a little bit officious about this. One bank was taken to task recently and became the feature of the front page of the Herald because they one staff member attempted to accuse a daughter of actually of elder abuse. They were not prepared to accept that she had power of attorney over her mother's account and that this was valid. So we're going wildly on a pendulum swing here. It seems that people have got awareness, but they may be overzealous in how they're using that awareness. That's a case yet to be fully investigated, and we will see the outcome in due course. But the bank has decided to step back, and you know, they're not apologising exactly, but they are on the back foot at this point. And there have been a few other cases recently of similar things where banks have intervened and stopped people's accounts unfairly, and it looks like ageism at work. Okay. So ageism operates in unfair ways, similarly to sexism and racism. And as we've had large media attention on the Me Too movement and George Floyd's death in the States, with the actions of police being focused on, so we're now seeing a growing awareness of what it means to discriminate against people simply on the basis of age. That's what ageism is. Now, it seems to be that we need to understand much more what it might be like to live in a society where a quarter of the population is over the age of 65, and quite a significant number of those, more than 10%, are over 80. Because that will be a different sort of society. It will be different in terms of spending power, who's spending where and how, and it will be different in terms of what sort of housing is needed and what sort of transport arrangements are needed, and also how do we communicate when a significant number of those people may be beyond the digital divide and not have all the access and all the fluidity of communication that is needed in the modern society? Now, there are degrees of computer literacy, there are degrees of mobile phone use and so on. And just because someone is on Facebook to see the grandchildren doesn't mean that they can do their banking online or that they feel confident about picking up new technologies. It is great to see that some banks are doing really well in providing additional support around the move to internet banking. It's also great to see they're protecting a lot of seniors through real awareness raising around scamming. And it's great to see that some companies like insurance companies are linking up with SeniorNet to provide for their customers some free extra assistance as they decrease the number of stores they have across the country. Now, it's really important to look into how the structuring of society ensures greater inclusivity, greater accessibility, greater opportunity for seniors to be out and about spending money. Because if a quarter of the population is going to be over 65, then their contributions financially are going to be very important. If they stay home and they don't spend money, that does impact on the local community and on the viability of small business. So we could look at transport, housing, communications and civics as the four main areas where seniors need to be included in the planning. And I say the planning because it is really the big picture strategy that's being put in place right now with the long-term regional plan for transport in Auckland. It's that critical that there is a reflection in that document about the strategy needed to cater for such an ageing population. I didn't see it anywhere in the document, and I have talked about this before. But there is an adjunct to this, and that is that your public transport investment, if it doesn't include accessibility in terms of park and ride, for example, that works for seniors. There's no use having park and rides if all those spaces are taken up before 8 o'clock in the morning. When seniors want to go to a medical appointment at 2 in the afternoon and are prepared to catch a bus to get there, they should be able to go to a park and ride facility. And there should be some parking available for gold card holders that's reserved for them so that it's available and it's there, not taken up simply by long-term commuters. That keeps their car off the road. And this is what's needed, is more options for older people. I mean, a lot of people as they age do have low vision issues, or they may have mobility issues temporarily because they've had a hip replacement or because they've had a heart operation and a pacemaker put in, or some other reason why they're not driving. This also needs to be accommodated in terms of how do they get to the park and ride, because very often the first leg of the journey is the most difficult leg. It's what puts people off the public transport, that and the last leg. So we need to plan for that more. We also need to focus more on housing. And a lot of people, because they own their own home, automatically think most seniors are in their own home. And that was the truth one generation back. It was the basis for the value placed on New Zealand Super. It was calculated to be a rate suitable for people owning their own home. But now we've got a third of seniors who don't own their own homes and who are paying very high rentals often. They're not in pension housing necessarily. Neither are they in retirement villages. Less than 20% of New Zealanders are in retirement villages. And this is a fact that planners very often don't realise. They have this sort of concept that as people age, they will go to a retirement village automatically. Well, that is not something that is financially within a lot of people's choice. I think lack of understanding and lack of appreciation of how seniors live, what impacts on their decisions and how they're moving around, how they're living. This actually is something that this lack of information, lack of awareness actually impacts on not only the quality of decision making and planning and policies that come out, but it also means that people who are giving advice, whether it's police on the 105 number, whether it's community folk in their 30s and 40s who are managing facilities and services, they often don't know what seniors are grappling with. They often have no idea of the realities, and they may give advice which is clearly going in the wrong direction. They may tell people to sell their houses, for example. Oh, you can rent. Well, you know, that is to suggest that to someone who already owns a home. They may be having difficulties financially, but to suggest that they would sell up and that would be a first option is quite upsetting to hear. So it's very important that we actually have some education and advocacy available in the community that actually assists seniors, so that people who are giving advice are actually trained to know more about the transitions that seniors go through. And often they go through a number of transitions. So what would suit someone in their 60s will not be good advice for the person in their 70s or 80s, because they'll be transiting through different issues in different ways. But largely there are some principles that stand out, and they stand out from research, and they stand out from papers that are already documents that are circulating, that are in libraries. So the Salvation Army did a fantastic research about the issues facing baby boomers for housing. And it remains a seminal work. It was published in 2015, and it was pointing out there was a dire critical shortage. It's going to get worse of social housing for people who don't own their own home and who are unlikely to be able to get a deposit together or a mortgage once they hit 50. And as well as that, there will also be a shortage of suitable houses for people to downsize to, because not everyone is going to a retirement village, not everyone can afford it, but they still may require some sort of housing that they want to own. They want the security, the reliability, and the opportunity to stay in their own neighbourhood where their relationships are built up, where they're familiar with things, their meaning of their life is contained around the experiences they've had in that area. And that's important to them, to their well-being. They don't want to move to somewhere that's miles away and where they know nobody. So it's critical that this understanding is generated more widely. Now, why are these things important about living in your own home, about social connectivity with your community, about being able to be familiar with your surroundings and relax and enjoy your contacts that you've known, your networks and so on? Why is all this important? Well, I guess it's important because it's more difficult to deal with change at an older age. It's important to keep the memory going, because that's part of mental well-being, is to keep those memories alive. And they stay alive when your surroundings are familiar. You value the heritage buildings. You know that what happened at that particular place at a point in your life. You remember social occasions that were held in the restaurant or in the dance hall or whatever. And it's important that you can get around to see these things. It's important that there is some transport locally that works for you. And so whether it's a subsidised taxi service, whether it's a local loop bus that gets you around during the day, and is it transport that is affordable? The gold card works for people in the major cities, but it's not the panacea of everything for everyone, and it certainly doesn't work for people who are in far-flung rural towns or in smaller cities where it isn't there. So we need to have a much more comprehensive look at what public transport needs to look like for seniors to be adequate, and what advantages seating and lighting makes. If you can walk on your first leg of the journey to get to the first bus ride, and there's a seat there to rest on, and there's a shelter so that when it rains you can actually get to a point where you can dry off before you get on the bus, all this makes it so much more doable. If, however, you are faced with walking against the wind and the rain, arriving at a stop, no seat, nowhere to rest, and you might have missed the bus because it came 3 minutes early and you've got half an hour to wait till the next one, this is really off-putting. So we do need to actually have some people who do customer service training from the point of view of actually going out on mystery bus tours and actually experiencing what real people experience when they travel. Does the bus get lowered automatically when they turn up at the stop? Or do they have to ask the bus driver? Do they have to put up with a grumpy response? It's no use being an official from the Auckland Transport climbing on the bus, because of course the driver will lower the bus for that person. It's got to be something that's done as a mystery shopper type experience, where we can uncover what works and what doesn't and where the gaps are. So there's quite a lot to be actually considered, and there's quite a lot to be tackled. Now, Bill Rayner, the current president of North Shore Grey Power, has written about the population explosion in Auckland. He's talking about Auckland as having a bout of urban obesity as the size of Auckland increases rapidly and the numbers of people are increasing. he's talking about how their population is shifting. The demographic disruption, as Dr. Paul Spoonley calls it in his latest book about the new New Zealand. This is what Bill has been talking about in this article in the Seniors magazine, which is the magazine 450 plus. And very clearly he's spelling out that the critical time is 2030. Where we will have reached the 20% mark, where 20% of our population will be over 65. But I would say that 2035 is even more alarming, because by then we will be one quarter of the Auckland population being over 65. And that's not really that far away. But certainly in the next decade, we've got this massive increase. It is massive, and it really is going to affect every area, but particularly transport, housing and communications. And I think one of the things that hasn't been looked at all is the lack of senior housing. There's been a slight increase in Kāinga Ora doing one and two bedroom units in social housing to help provide for a small number of seniors on the waiting list. But there's a large number of seniors who aren't even on the waiting list because they don't believe they've got a chance of getting anything, because they feel demoralised and they prefer to stay in their own neighbourhood, and they are scared of maybe they would have to move to another neighbourhood in order to get a Housing New Zealand property. So they're not keen on that concept of having to move out of their community. And on the other hand, there are people who live in their own home who would be better off in a purpose-built place with double glazed windows and with the latest design mark features, so that it's suitable for all ages and they can have a good resale value at the end, if that's what they're looking for, to pass on to the family some sort of asset. But who's going to build it? And they haven't got the energy and the confidence to be able to look at what it would take to try and engineer such a project themselves. But is the market delivering? And that's the question that Dr. Kay Saville-Smith, who's done research for Age Concern and who's published widely academically on this subject, she's been very concerned about the housing crisis for seniors, the hidden crisis for seniors, and what's not working. And certainly the market isn't working. The market, left to its own devices, has preferred to build large homes, five-bedroom homes with three, four, five bathrooms, because the profit's there, and not provide for this growing need for seniors. It's really interesting that Auckland Council 2 years ago voted to develop an age-friendly city plan and put considerable effort and resourcing into doing comprehensive consultation over the last year. But with COVID, it seems like all the information's ended up in the cupboard. And there is a danger that it may not see the light of day, or that it will be too late because it's not being used to inform the regional transport plan. It's not being used to be incorporated into the appropriate discussions about community facilities that are being sold off at the moment. It's not being used to enlighten the new people who've come in to governance roles within the council in the last 6 months or so, or last year. So it's an opportunity that may be wasted, and that's really unfortunate. Part of that may be because of staff turnover, as there's been considerable cuts at Auckland Council, but part of it may be simply that COVID has thrown the budget in the air, and with the lolly scramble and the way the cookie crumbles, other priorities have just taken over. And again, seniors are the hidden change in society. They're the hidden people. They're the people whose voice is least heard. And it's not fashionable to listen to older people who might be considered white male and has been and past it and not up to speed or up to date. Nevertheless, some of our most skilled thinkers strategically are in fact seniors who are doing PhDs and doing advanced studies into some of these very topic area, these very areas, topical areas, right now. And some people who've been in very senior roles in government themselves have an idea of what is possible, what is likely, and what is happening abroad. So in Australia and in the UK, they have an ombudsman to deal with seniors' issues. If something's not working for seniors, it's not fair, or seniors are being left out, they're not being included, their voice is not heard, then they have an avenue. And that avenue enables an ombudsman to take cases to court where somebody is putting financial pressure on an older person to sell their home or giving the wrong advice. People are accountable and they can be held accountable. And that's what's needed in society. Both Labor and National agreed this was an important change. They told seniors this before the election. So we're waiting now to see what will happen and whether, in fact, this shift of actually providing teeth so that elder abuse can be curbed. There is a deterrent. We're waiting to see this shift. It's an important one, and it's one that should be announced on World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, in my opinion. Let's listen and watch and see what does happen. Now, for your pleasure and listening enjoyment, I've selected a track from Pixie Williams' collection, 1949 to 1951. It's that famous tune, Blue Smoke, which I'm sure will be very well known to some of you. Enjoy, and we will be together again in a week. Thank you.
day.